Hello and welcome to this month of Motorsport July edition. We're in the second half of the year 2023. I'm Sean Smith and he's Sam Green.
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hello there. Everyone well? All good?
Yeah.
I say everyone. Bad. You're the only one here today, Sam.
I say I'm the only one here. Yeah, always good. Yeah, always good, really. Can't complain. How are you, Sean?
I am fine. It's
good.
It's the weekend. It's not hot. Things are good.
Absolutely.
Because everything's better when it's not hot. As is, they're going to be some of our topics of this month for Motorsport this month. For those who are new, this month for Motorsport sort of reviews the bigger headings that we can be bothered to talk about that have happened in the last 28 to 31 days. And we discuss them within a 10-minute time frame or less. So in this case, we're going to start off with the one which we're not going to give every single spoiler away because you need to read my article that comes out in a day or two.
Ooh.
The 6 hours of Monza, which we, Sam, were in Italy for.
We were actually there. This was brilliant, wasn't it?
That's yes. Yes.
I absolutely loved it. just being in at Monza, like somewhere like Monza, is very cool to go as a motorsports fan.
No, it doesn't matter what's on. It wasn't cool. It was 30 degrees, Sam. It wasn't
well,
cool.
Okay. It was 30 plus most of the time we were there.
Hmm.
In fact, it was a few times we left the hotel and it was at like 9 in the morning. It was already 30 degrees. It was very hot.
Yes.
But actually, it was fine. It was pretty, of being very hot. It was all right. And if you were in a shady area, which we were for the race, it was fine. It wasn't really that bad.
Obviously. Yeah, but by the Sunday, we had basically decided I'm going to get a seat in the grandstand and stay there. And so I did.
Yeah. Yeah, and I basically did the same. We watched the whole race from there. And the only time we left the grandstand was to get water.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was good. The cars are fantastic, and World Endurance is fantastic, and Monza's fantastic, Italy's fantastic, so yep. It's all good, really.
So, everybody, go and buy a ticket for the next race in WEC in Japan, and, go over there.
Go and buy a ticket, Cree.
It will probably be a bit colder.
Probably.
It'll probably rain. It normally rains at Fuji.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's another one, isn't it? They do go to some cool tracks, World Endurance, don't they? They don't have the loads of races like Formula One, but that makes it better. But the tracks they do go to, I think, are very cool.
They're more memorable than.
Yeah.
Like, can you remember half the races of F1 this year?
No. I can assume that Max Verstappen won, but I don't remember where it was.
Yeah. So, yes, Formula One. Stop adding races. Back when it was 16, it was much better. World Endurance Championship, if you can get to 10, I mean, that's
yeah,
that's
you could have a few more, but
one,
not loads.
I think one a month would be good for WC.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be fine.
And so long as Silverstone's on there, happy days.
That's the main thing, yeah.
Add it to the bloody calendar, you idiots.
Just get it done.
And Silverstone, build another tunnel.
Yes, that is one thing that Silverstone kind of does need to do.
Yes.
Maybe when they finish their karting circuit, they'll build a tunnel.
Yes, stop building hotel. What, they're building a karting circuit?
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
For karting.
Yeah, obviously, but why? Why is it possible?
I don't know. It's going to be like a proper big karting circuit, like you see at Le Mans and like at Spa as well.
Well, there was a kart track at Monza. Which I saw.
Yeah, but that wasn't really.
I saw one brave soul in at a 400 degree heat go outside in.
Yeah, in his shorts and his t-shirt.
Yeah, I was like, no chance.
I was half tempted, but thought, no, I'm on holiday, no cars.
Shall we talk about? We can't not talk about Monza and not talk about pizza. It was great.
Oh, well, yeah, some really good pizza, really good food generally. Really, really, wasn't it?
Mainly pizza.
For you, definitely mainly pizza. Yeah. I mean, I had pasta a few times and a burger, which was phenomenal.
And lobster.
Half a lobster.
But luckily, Italy is very close to the sea.
Yeah, yeah. Matt Jones.
Even though even though Milan is sort of right in the middle of the north of Italy, so not very close to the sea at all. But
not that close. But generally, Italy is surrounded by it, at least. So mostly.
Anyway, so Italy's fantastic. Go visit Italy. You are.
Yeah, 100%. And the town of Monza, we heard a few bits. Well, I certainly did before going, of like when you're going for like the Grand Prix weekend, there's a lot of sort of, you have to be a little bit careful around the town, around the city, because there's a lot of people, like pickpockets and,
oh, I heard this,
and stuff. And we saw absolutely none of that. No. So everyone was like perfectly accommodating and friendly, and most of them spoke English to a certain amount. And even if they
were polite about it.
Absolutely, yeah. Like I had to buy some cream for mosquito bites. Had no idea how to say that in Italian. But the lady in the pharmacy tried as much as she could, because she didn't speak English, to help me out. Google Translate came to the rescue, and I managed to sort that out. So it was all good. but no, it was a fantastic trip. Everything about it was brilliant, apart from sitting on the runway in Ryanair.
Oh God!
For nearly 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
Yeah,
just not moving, just on the taxiway before we even got to the runway.
The best bit was when they went, if we don't leave now, we're never going. It's never going to happen. And then we didn't move. And then
we didn't move. Yeah,
for another hour or something.
Yeah, ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. But apart from Ryanair,
let's talk about the actual race, shall we?
Yes, let's do that.
So, 6 hours of Monza. It was, should we say, a slightly partisan crowd?
Yeah. Although, you know what? Although pretty much everyone there was wearing a red shirt or a red hat.
I was.
I was as well. I was wearing my red hat. you know what? I think, actually, Italian fans in general are there for a good race, and that's what they got. And I feel like
they're good sports.
And when, should we just say who won now?
Yeah.
Let's face it, it was the number 7 Toyota. And I do feel like, although obviously everyone wanted Ferrari to win, the fact that they were beaten on merit by a faster car with a better strategy, not by fluke, not by like underhand tactics or anything, it was just Toyota were just quicker on the day. And I think the fans kind of appreciated that and gave them the respect that deserves.
Or put it this way, nobody booed.
Absolutely no one booed at any point.
That's not true. Including me, booed when Sebastian Buemi got called into pitting for killing the Aston Martin.
Oh, yeah, true. Yes, which I was very disappointed about. The 777 D station, about an hour in, got annihilated by Buemi. And there was a bit of a groan, wasn't there, at turn one, lap one.
It wasn't a groan, it was a cheer, followed by, ah.
Yeah, when I think it was the 51, wasn't it, Giovinazzi was driving, got turned around at the chicane.
Yeah, which everyone only recognised, I say that, I only recognised after the fact. Everyone else was, the Italians had obviously both eyes on both Ferraris, because while that was happening, the 50 was trying to take the lead.
Everyone was distracted by that.
But then they went, oh, and I thought there was, because the 50 had like not taken it, but then you saw the other one backwards.
Yeah, not a good couple of corners for Ferrari, but they came back to it. And it was just a really good race generally, wasn't it? We had some new hypercars. We had the who was it, the WeatherTech,
yep, Porsche.
Porsche, I thought they did well. They got a bit unlucky. They had a few teething problems. Yep. But it was nothing major. The car looked fairly good. Peugeot were quick. Ferrari were quick. Even Glickenhaus was fast in a straight line. The Porsches, actually, the customer Porsches, were stronger than the... I know it's not a factory team, but they were faster than the Penske's.
Now, to be fair, Al said this would happen months ago.
Yeah, he did, yeah. And Jota extracting a lot out of that car already. You have to say the WeatherTech car probably going to do some good stuff there, I think, by the looks of it as well.
Well, it's racing in IMSA now for, I think, the rest of the year. But
Is it? Okay.
But, yeah, it shows that the Porsche is a pretty easy car for teams to get their
Yeah, and actually, I watched. I don't know if you've seen it on YouTube. They do this full access, where it's a lot more kind of. There's not as much commentary, if that makes sense, but it's a lot more kind of in the background, recording in garages, listening to driver conversations and stuff. And that team all through the weekend, the drivers were saying it's only a little bit more difficult than the GT car. Like, it's not that much different. It feels quite similar to how the GT car drives. It's just faster generally. So you just have to adjust to that. It understeers a little bit, and then it oversteers, which is quite normal, quite approachable. And that's what you want, really, for a customer car. You need it to be drivable by everybody. You don't want to have the best of the best 1%, your factory drivers, to be able to actually drive it. You need customers to be able to pick it up and work with it. And that's clearly, the Porsche is fairly good for that.
Yeah.
We haven't seen as many customers, certainly in World Endurance anyway, apart from them just yet, but hopefully we'll have some more soon.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth saying that this is the first time we've seen the hypercars in real life. And also we're gonna get a couple more minutes because we spent half of it talking about food. And I was actually quite impressed with them. They're obviously not as fast as the old LMP ones, but they're not meant to be.
They look quick though, don't they? Like when we went out to the back of the circuit to see some cornering, they look fast. And on the straights they are fast. They sort of touch.
On the straights you can't tell the difference.
No, absolutely. And to the untrained eye, they're a prototype. Like, they are a fast prototype. They're not an LMP1 car, but they are really, still very much
really
prototype.
The only difference you see is they look heavier in the corner.
Yes, but I think that's fine. And I think they don't look wallowy, if that makes sense. They're not like a big GT car. They are definitely still thoroughbred prototypes, just not as on edge, maybe is the right phrase, as a P1 car was. Which is better as well, because it, like I said, it means that they're a bit more approachable, they're a bit easier to drive. Although from what they were saying as well, there's so much you have to manage with the cars still that they are just as difficult. But in a different way. And I think it's interesting, and the cars, they look generally as a field, they look brilliant.
Especially, you know, we got 13, 14 of them. And next year, we're probably going to get 20.
Going to have even more. It's going to be really, really good. And the cars themselves are stunning to look at. The Ferrari is beautiful.
Yep. So is the Glickenhaus, in fairness.
Yeah, the Glickenhaus looks great in person. The Porsche, I really like in person. It looks fantastic, especially that WeatherTech livery.
The Porsche sounds good. I don't know about
it does.
I don't like the looks of Porsche's full stop anyway, but
no, true.
But it did sound good.
And I think
the Bicolis sounded the best.
It did, actually, yeah. And it looks good as well. To give it its due, it looks proper. It looks like a proper race car. It looks really good. And it sounds brilliant. Everyone was saying all through the grandstands, everyone was going, wow, that sounds brilliant.
Yeah, which all it is a bored out P2 engine. It doesn't come across on TV. I've listened to the, you know, the TV feed, and you can't hear it, but it's really noticeable in real life.
Absolutely, it sounds brilliant. It's a lot louder than the P2 cars, which is saying something because they're pretty noisy. But yeah, I really liked it. It was a cool car,
and it actually had a clean race.
It did,
which I was it's the first time I've ever seen Bicolis made a car have a clean race, so I was incredibly happy.
There was one point, wasn't there, where it just didn't quite fire up after a pit stop, where I could tell you were a little bit worried.
Fuck off. Look, it's not my first rodeo, Sam. I've seen Bicolis' pit stops and basically anything to do with them. You've always got to be a bit nervous.
Every time he came in the pit lane, I looked over at Sean and he was just sort of looking there like, bated breath.
Please move.
All his fingers and toes crossed, hoping that it would just fire up and pull away again. It inevitably did, but it took a little bit of time sometimes.
Look, if they all they got to really sort out is a starter motor, I can deal with
ignition,
that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of a bit telling that their last stint was an hour and 15 minutes, which I think is a record for a hypercar, getting going that long in green conditions. It's probably because they didn't want to fire the starter motor back up again.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. They were doing a lot of fuel saving, so they didn't have to do a last pit stop.
Yeah, which is why they lost to the Peugeot by like 9 thousandths of a second on the line or something.
Yeah, it was close, wasn't it? It was very close.
If there was a lead change at the time, the pit stop was happening for my Collins, I didn't see it.
No, it was full focus on that pit lane.
Hmm.
It's just brilliant. If you haven't been to World Endurance, definitely go.
Yes.
Because it is, you get so much access. It's way cheaper than Formula One.
It's just unquestionable. We had a whole holiday for less than the ticket would be.
Yeah, I mean, you could do our entire trip to Italy for the cost of, like, a weekend ticket to Silverstone. Like, why wouldn't you? Like, it's just so much better. You get to go to Italy, have great food, meet interesting people, go to a different circuit, which is one of the coolest in the world. People. Yeah, go to one of the coolest tracks in the world, see very, very fast cars race for 6 hours, don't forget, as well as the support races. I think, you'd be mad not to.
Hmm.
Everyone should be going to World Endurance Championship.
Yes. Let's move on to the next subject.
Yes.
Shall we keep it Le Mans focused for this one?
We can do, yeah.
So, last month, of course, was the Circuit de la Sarthe, Le Mans 24 Hours, 100th anniversary. This month, they had Le Classique, where basically they brought out a load of old cars and had a little run around for a couple of days, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, very, very cool, isn't it? Because it's a very eclectic mix, isn't there? Let's face it. Let me just open up my results, because obviously that's the bit that's really...
Oh, the results don't matter. It's more the train spotting sort of thing. Go, oh, there's a Maserati MC12. That never raced at Le Mans.
Yeah. But it's cool, isn't it? It's very cool. We had loads and loads of Group C, like GT1, GT2,
Well, some of the stuff I wouldn't even call classic is just what I saw 10 years ago.
Yeah, but then you also had things like a Bugatti, a 1928 Bugatti.
Did you watch the Bentley race?
It wasn't a Bentley race. It was just Bentleys everywhere. There was
a Bentley race.
Oh, was there? Oh, I didn't see that. I didn't see that.
It was incredible. I was like, how do any of these cars finish 24 hours?
was that like blowers and like that era? Yeah, oh, mate, they're brilliant. They're so cool. They're fastest lorries in the world, aren't they? like Delage and Alfa Romeo 8Cs, 1922. Had a 1931 Austin 7 racing at Le Mans.
I think that driver must be terrified.
Oh, well, undoubtedly, but it was brilliant. There's just so much different categories at the classic, because Le Mans has been going so long and the classic tries to encapsulate all of it. It's fantastic. You get some really interesting cars. They are racing for quite a while, not full 24 hours each.
I think it was a 2-hour race or something like that.
They essentially do I think they do about 6 hours total over the 24-hour period. But they race in the day and the night sort of thing. Like they're all through that.
I was most intrigued by the 90s and early 2000s cars. You know, when you saw, as you say, that was in the prototypes, but then it went up to the 2008, 2010 sort of time. So you saw the Ferrari F430 GT2, which was one of my favorite cars ever. Had a range of Porsches, and he just shows how fat it got from the 90s to nowadays. Because the 90s Porsche is just so thin. It was just a crazy. Like, they had the Vipers out there, they had the Celine. What else though? But there was R8s, there was a Dome, which I'm amazed it still exists. Yeah, it was just the Toyota GT1, that was fighting against a Pescarolo from like 2002, 2003 or something.
Yeah. And these are part of the Enduros Racing Legends, aren't they?
Hmm.
That is a series that goes all around, certainly Europe, if not the world. And Le Mans Classic is one of their events that they go to. But there's the six grids of official Le Mans Classic, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's those extras that you have around there as well, which is like the... those slightly... I'd say slightly newer. GT1s, that era of car, and things like, you have like McLaren F1s. There was a few. I saw a few of them. I didn't see any F40s. I saw a couple of Porsche GT1s. I think there was a Mercedes.
Well, that was just more or less everything. If it hasn't been crushed or crashed in a subsequent race at some point,
yeah,
it was probably there. There were like 550 Maranellos. There was the Bentley. The what's it called? Is it called the Speed 8? The 2003 car? Or the Aero 8? No.
12. Was it the 12? That's the Aero 8 and Morgan.
Oh.
The Speed 12, I think, was the GT, like the P1.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
Speed 8, yes. There was a North Star Cadillacs. There were the Lolas. There was a Painos. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
That Painos still exists.
Yeah.
But then one cool bit was that they had the like lots of the different winners through the years, like the actual winning cars, which they brought out the museum to basically just show off more than anything else. It was more of a parade rather than a race, because that would have been cool. But also, yeah, imagine the crash. That would have cost...
Imagine that, trying to put on the same grid all of those Le Mans winners. That would be very interesting to drive in, I would imagine, if you're in one of the newer cars. Or the older cars, to be fair. No, I mean, it's very cool, isn't it? And they kind of do it all... So the same age group of cars are racing together, generally speaking.
Sort of.
I mean, I don't know how many cars there was total, but there was a lot. Put it that way. I mean, I've just opened it up. But there's obviously the six grids. I would say there's probably 20 cars on each of those grids, plus the support races. There's a lot of cars. There's a lot of stuff to see. Blower Bentleys, Bugattis, Aston Martins, got E-type Jags, D-type Jags, C-type Jags. All of the Jags. Loads and loads of very cool stuff. 250s. There was the bread van was racing, wasn't it?
That thing Ferrari races everywhere. That thing must have so many miles on it.
No, absolutely. But that's what it's supposed to be. It's a racing car, isn't it? It should be raced.
It probably has more miles than most Ferraris in the wild.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think it's raced more extensively than most cars are driven, isn't it? But yeah, 917s. You have Porsche 917s, Ford GT40s. Just really cool old cars that you, because it's Le Mans, they come from all over the world. Like, you might see some of these cars at things like the Goodwood Revival or members meeting, but not on this quantity. Like, it's huge, it's massive. And I think it's one of those events, isn't it? I think probably we should go to that.
Yeah, that'd be a good holiday. I mean Le Mans 24 Hours is already pretty good, so
yeah,
just seeing loads of old stuff, like with proper Le Mans cars, as I call them. yeah, that'd be cool. This one we can cut short, I guess. Just goes to Monza and goes to France. There we go. We should just be like we should get sponsorship from the European Tourist Board. Yeah.
So
basically, if you guys want to give us a sponsor, at Stelvio Auto, follow us on social media.
Yeah, basically.
Right, let's move on to something else.
Okay, speaking of France.
Ah yes, we this is a good segue. Le French, Le Catastrophe, L'Alpine, La Catastrophe.
Yes.
L'Exit. So, Alpine, that famous French team based in Enstone, are doing a bit of a cabinet reshuffle, should we say?
Mid-season reshuffle,
which normally implies confidence. Is that the word I'm looking for?
No,
success.
No, the opposite. Yeah, no.
Stability.
A downward spiral.
Spiral. That's what I'm thinking of. Yes.
Yeah.
Easy to mix up.
Yes. Although we'll see if it was as downward as the Alpine was last weekend in Hungary at turn one, lap one, when it drove over his teammate.
They've had a couple of coming together, but hey, they're French, buff.
It was quite the Twitter feed for Alpine.
If I swear in French, do I have to put it as explicit on the video?
I don't know.
Right.
Do you list French as a language?
Well, maybe.
I don't know then.
Anyway, back to the talking point. So I have very strong opinions on this, but I want to hear yours first, though.
Okay. I think that the whole problem with Alpine goes deeper than Otmar and Pat Fry.
That's the name I was thinking of earlier.
Yeah, and Alain Permain, who is also leaving.
Alain Permain has been there longer than I've been alive.
He's been there forever, hasn't he? And I mean, I just think it just feels like they're kind of...
I don't want to have a reputation for dunking on Renault as a company and by extension Nissan because of the same company.
Yeah.
But they're so over corporatized.
They are. And I think it's not gone their way, so they've gone, right, whose fault's that? It must be the boss. Well, I really don't think it is. I think it's a bigger issue.
Well, think of the whole reason that Alpine are on the grid in the first place. It's because Renault didn't want to have their brand name besmirched too much more than it already was by them losing. Yeah.
By Red Bull, primarily.
But they put a more sacrificial, less important name on the grid so that it took pressure off their big brand. And now
so
they're...
it wasn't Renault.
Yeah, even though everyone still calls them Renault. And yes, let's just say they are still Renault. I can't go into details because I work with them. But it's a massive waste. I think Alpine / Renault should be fighting for the top three on the constructors' grid. But it's
oh, absolutely, absolutely. A company of that size with the resources they have,
they're a works team.
Yeah, they're a factory work. Well, they're all factory teams, I know, aren't they? But they're an engine supplier and a works team. I know they only supply themselves now.
Yeah, but that's their own making, isn't it?
That's their own fault. Yeah, but realistically, you would expect them to be above customer teams, or at least most of the customer teams.
The fact they've been faulted really. By, I mean, McLaren, yeah, because McLaren are a customer at the end of the day.
Yeah, they're a customer of Mercedes, aren't they? So.
Yeah, and Aston Martin / Ford India / Jordan / Spyker / whatever.
Mercedes customer.
Yeah, they're a customer, and they were seventh in the constructors last year. Now they've vaulted up to above Alpine, who were, at the end of last year, easily the fourth best.
Yeah, you'd have to say.
And I'm
they should be there.
I don't think they'll sell, because I think that...
No.
I don't think, A, the costs are now so much lower than they were that they won't bother. And B, who would they sell to? Who would buy them?
In their current state, you don't know, really. I mean, Andretti have tried to find a way in, aren't they? But they've got enough resources of their own. They don't really need to buy a team.
Well,
Andretti
are allegedly going to have a Renault powertrain in them if they get on the grid.
Yeah, apparently so. And there's this high-tech racing, a lot of support formulas at the moment.
High-tech have been trying for years to get into F1.
And yeah, but apparently they're a lot closer now than they have been before. So, I mean, maybe there's a jumping off point there. But I mean, again, they have their own base at the moment. They're in the UK, but they're different to Alpine. They're not
Hi-Tech
there.
Used to be Mercedes aligned back in the day.
Yeah, they still are to a certain extent. A lot of Mercedes junior drivers go through Hi-Tech, and there's another one now in British racing called Argenti, which is, again, there's a lot of some Mercedes drivers there. I think there's bigger problems than
you think.
The boss. and I think Otmar has been kind of
scapegoated.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Well, there was a list on Sky Sports yesterday that of all the people who have left, including drivers, which I think is a bit.
You can't really count that.
Take that with a pinch of salt. But it's not. They are right in that it's not confidence inspiring for those personnel who are still there.
No, absolutely. I mean, you'd have to be looking at other jobs, wouldn't you, if you were in Alpine at the minute.
Yeah. Well, it's two ways. You'd be looking over your shoulder for if you're going to get sacked, or if you were going to move up into that position, you'd be like, do I want that?
Very hesitant. They've almost been Bonottoed, haven't they?
Let's get to him now, actually. Matteo Bonotto is being whispered as being lined up for the team principal role. After I've made my opinions very clear that I think he was scapegoated by Ferrari.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
And if he does go to Alpine, I hope they win the Constructors next year.
I hope they do really well. I like him. I think he's a proper engineer. He knows his stuff.
And he's not a prick either.
No, you see, he comes across as a nice guy. I'd like to see him do well if he does go there. And I can understand why he wants to get back into it. But is that the best route for him?
I suppose, what other options does he have? Who else is open?
No one at the moment, let's face it.
I mean, again, he should never have been fired by Ferrari in the first place, but...
No, exactly. He shouldn't have been.
Well, let's put it this way. Mr. Vasseur has done nothing this season for the team.
No, it's been exactly... It's almost status quo, isn't it? It's exactly as it was when Mattia was there, so...
And everything that... Any positives that will have come this year will have been from what Matteo Bonotto did.
Yeah, exactly.
Year.
Yeah. So, yeah, because it's all carried over and.
What Vasseur should have been there to do was to crack the whip, get everyone in line, and get everyone trusting each other. Tell me, Sam, are Ferrari's strategists and drivers on the same wavelength still? Are they working harmoniously together? No.
In fact, at Austria a few weeks ago, you heard Charles Leclerc dictating the strategy to the strategists. During the race, where he demanded that they went on to, I can't remember what compound it was, but he basically came on the radio and said, "We're going on to the hard compound." And the strategist went,
"We are okay. Checking."
Yeah, checking.
That is a meme now.
It's bad, isn't it?
I'm a Ferrari fan, Sam, and it's.
Yeah.
I couldn't care less if the F1 team does well or not at the moment.
Yeah, well, this is it, isn't it? And you have to look, really. I know it's the car in World Endurance is being run by AF Corsa, but they're doing a much better job.
Well, put it this way, if Leclerc doesn't win tomorrow, AF Corsa have done better with their basically their money found behind down the back of the sofa.
Brand new car
than Ferrari's many, many multi-million pound operation in Formula One has done in at least a year. Did they win a race last year? I don't remember. Yeah, they did. But yeah, Alpine, get your shit together.
Yeah, it's just not... And just getting rid of all the top brass doesn't look like a good...
Well, it's that, they haven't got instant replacements for them.
No, they've not gone. Something's Otmar snapped. Being replaced by something. Something has gone, and they've gone, right, we're off.
Yeah, it's even weirder the fact they're still doing this weekend and then being told to leave. Amicably, apparently.
We'll soon see if the two Alpines go out on a dry track on intermediate tires. Maybe we'll see that strategy unfold. But
It works sometimes.
Yeah.
Let's move on to another segue to more F1 musical chairs.
Yes. De Vries out, Ricciardo in.
Right. I also have strong opinions on this, Sam. What are yours?
I do feel like De Vries has been on the chopping block for a while.
Yes.
Perhaps unjustifiably, because it's like first season, new team, new car, still adjusting.
And is that car a top of the line, front of the grid race winner?
No.
Is it
not
the second worst car on the grid at the moment?
Arguably, yes.
Then
I know he's not matched Yuki, but Yuki is more experienced.
He's
got a few seasons under his belt. He knows the industry. He knows, like, the Red Bull family. He knows. He knows the team better. De Vries has come into not only F1 but also Red Bull as a conglomerate and the team, and has been trying to juggle all of those things, and has been almost immediately removed for lack of performance.
How many races did Brendan Hartley get?
Oh, even less. I think he only had, like, I don't know, but it feels like less. I feel like it was Austin, wasn't it, that he got replaced? It was later in the year.
And apparently he got 25 starts.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, much less then. Got half of that. But what really annoyed me as well, and this is, it's always the way with Red Bull, what's his name? I've completely forgot. He's just gone out of my head.
Describe.
The not Horner, but the boss.
Franz Tost.
No,
Dietrich Mateschitz.
No, Mateschitz is wasn't he the one that
Marco
died? That's it, Marco.
Nobed.
Marco. Just sometimes these guys, they are drivers. They are, in theory, the best 20 in the world, but read into that what you will. But you know what? Sometimes the team just has to get behind them and say, no, you're doing a decent job. Let's keep going. The pace will come. And it feels like Helmut Marko, instead of that, goes, no, you're shit.
Yeah.
And then that just rattles around in the driver's head, or he goes, well, why didn't you get points? Your teammate got points. And that rattles around, and then the confidence goes, and once the confidence goes, the pace goes.
Well, even when your teammate doesn't get points, yeah, he says, why didn't you get points?
Exactly.
I think he's a horrible person.
I just think, yeah, the way that driver...
Hang on, Sam. Helmut Marko only had 9 starts in Formula 1.
Okay.
So how good is he, really?
Well, exactly. So Nick De Vries is a better, more successful Formula 1 driver than Helmut Marko. There we go.
Yep. Helmut Marko, Helmut Marko never scored points, but he did get an 8th place in Monaco. So,
okay. But Monaco was different back then, though. There was probably only 8 cars left.
There was something called unreliability back then.
Yeah. But I think, look, last year we were all really, really impressed when De Vries got in the Williams at Monza and scored points.
Yep.
On... like, would be after being told on the Friday that he was in the car on Sunday. I think that's impressive, and that shows Nick De Vries is a good driver.
Of course he is. He's
as much as anything. And we've seen that in everything else he's raced.
He's GP3 champion, F2 champion. He's world Formula E champion.
He's raced sports cars as well in LMP2 with success.
Yeah, he was good there. He's just... he was also good as a test driver because Mercedes wants him back. And he was good in the Williams last year, and he's just come across one crap car and been dumped for
toxic driver circle that is the Red Bull family.
I think it's largely is Helmut Marko, in honesty.
I think it is. It's all Marko.
But it's always been the case, though. It's always been a wanker.
Always. It's always been like this. And I think it's...
I've never forgiven him for dumping Jaime Alguersuari.
No, and this is going back... like, obviously, that's going back, like, probably, 10 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, long, long time now. And I know that driver academies have to be fairly ruthless, especially lower down, to make sure that you get the best drivers for when you get to the top. But when you're bringing drivers in, like Nyck de Vries, there has to be a certain amount of adjustment. Last year he was racing in Formula E. The top speed there is like 130 mile an hour. Now he's doing 200 plus. Like, in a completely different car, with much, much higher levels of downforce, mechanical grip, speed, just faster. The brakes are completely different. The power units are different. I know he was test driving, but that's not the same. You don't get the mileage as a test driver.
Well, not these
that
days.
You do. That you used to. Like,
I just think an F1 car, particularly a bad one, is very
difficult.
Always hard to drive. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it takes some adjustment. Now, I know he's had, for what, basically 7 months to get up to speed. But come on, like, give him a chance. Like, you gave Yuki a chance, and he's eventually kind of got there.
Yuki spent 2 years doing terribly.
Exactly. And now he's kind of regularly scoring points, assuming everything goes all right.
Well, put it this way, Daniel Ricciardo was slower than Yuki Tsunoda by quite a bit yesterday in qualifying. Should we just dump him right now?
Exactly, yeah. Just get rid of him.
Yeah, yeah. He's obviously crap.
He's a race winner, but why is he not beating his teammate?
Oh.
Like, I'm happy for Ricciardo because I like Ricciardo. I think he's good on the grid.
I don't like Daniel Ricciardo, but I don't wish him ill.
Yeah, I think if he's got a good car, he's a good enough driver to win races. But I don't agree with the way that De Vries was treated there. I think that he was always going to either leave on his own accord, as in pay his way out of his own contract, or get fired. There was no possible outcome where he did well enough to move into Red Bull. A few people mentioned that to me, that they thought De Vries was coming in to replace Checo eventually.
Well, we said that might be an idea last year.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that was ever the option. I think they needed someone to jump in that car in the short term. It was always going to be short term, and then they would promote someone from Formula 2, or they'd bring Ricciardo in, if depending on what they needed.
Let's talk about that, actually. I want to say Mick Doohan, but that's not his name. That's his dad's name. Jack Doohan, there we go. He's obviously racing in Super Formula at the minute. He wasn't picked at the start of this year because Nyck de Vries was. And he's not been picked in the middle of this year because Daniel Ricciardo is.
Yeah.
I think that's another black mark on the Red Bull Junior program.
This is the trouble with Red Bull Junior. They've got too many drivers. Like, they don't have enough seats. They're the only, like... Well, I guess if you branch out to, like, factory team and then customer, if that makes sense, then Mercedes would have... Because McLaren has their own program, so you can discount them, but Mercedes have Williams and Aston Martin, but
just nick Alpine's drivers.
Well, apparently so. but realistically, you're not going to be able to get a young driver in Aston Martin anytime soon. Let's face it. So that gives you Mercedes and Williams. Williams has got a rookie and a fairly experienced driver.
I mean, if anyone deserves to be fired, it's probably Logan Sargeant at this point of the season.
I mean, he's done even less than De Vries did. I don't know. I just think it's the Red Bull are too...
They're too cutthroat.
They are, yeah. And it just ruins people's careers as much as anything. And you can tell that drivers are better off once they've left that program than they are when they're in it. Because, like, you see Daniel Kvyat, we saw him at Monza doing well in a P2 car.
I'm talking trap. It's not Jack Doohan, it's Liam Lawson.
Oh, really? I would say Jack Doohan, I think, is in F2 at the moment, but he's in Red Bull program as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, in Formula 2, there's probably eight cars that are Red Bull liveried.
They've all got the same stickers, yeah. It's
Yeah, even though
ridiculous.
they're different teams and different drivers, they're all like Driver Academy of colours, which is fine. It's annoying when you're watching because you can't tell who's who, but I understand why they need to show that they are affiliated to Red Bull. However, when you have eight drivers, or even let's assume it is six drivers that
Well,
realistically in Formula 2 are vying for
yeah, it's
four
that's the point. It's them
realistically
plus
seats.
Liam Lawson,
Yeah.
plus Doohan, although I think he might be Renault aligned, but never mind.
Well, exactly. But then you've also got, let me find the standings,
Well,
driver
let's.
standings for
I want to
F2.
propose
So.
something. Is that Marco was pointing out the fact that De Vries is 28, and therefore expected a more rounded character. I
He's a
mean,
rookie.
that's complete. It's complete bollocks, isn't it?
That's mad. Absolute madness.
Yeah,
It
that's
makes
not.
no sense.
It then goes to the You know, if they were then going to say, oh, well, obviously that means they want young drivers because Max Verstappen was 12 years old or whatever when he won his first race. Then, you know, Liam Lawson's 21. You know, sure, that's you know, even that's getting on a bit for Red Bull drivers back in the day, in the Toro Rosso seats a few years ago. You know, it's
Right.
age is completely, absolutely arbitrary number.
So here is a list of drivers in Formula 2 at the moment who are aligned with the Red Bull Academy.
Okay.
So they may not be completely in, but they are aligned with it.
Yep.
So Daniel Hauger, Johann de Ruvela, Zane Maloney, Enzo Fittipaldi, is it Joe Crawford? Jack
Jack
Crawford,
Crawford.
sorry. Hadjar, another one. Iwasa, I think that is it. So that is one, two, three, four, five, six, seven drivers currently in Formula 2. Just in Formula 2
Who's
that
the
are.
highest?
I think at the
Let's see.
moment.
Frederik Vesti is currently leading
Iwasa
from 10.
currently is.
It was a surprise. I didn't expect it to be him.
Yeah, no, he's a good driver now. He's really come on. The last year or so, he's done very, very well. And he is probably the top Red Bull junior at the moment. But I mean, it's just. I don't know. It just seems like it's not the right way to go about fostering a good working relationship with these drivers. I mean, like, can you name any of Mercedes juniors?
Make Schumacher.
Okay, technically, yeah, he's one of them. Now he's come back
No,
again.
I can't. I've got no idea.
Okay, I can name one, but he's currently in F4.
Okay, so probably not ready for F1.
So he's not ready yet, let's face it. Daniel Ginchard, right house boy. but yeah, it's just that they've got less drivers, but they're aiming at quality rather than quantity. Red Bull feel like if they throw enough mud, some of it will stick.
Why is Enzo Fittipaldi still on their
I've got
junior?
no idea.
Okay.
Absolutely no idea. But I don't know if that's because the whole of Carlin. So Carlin is technically like aligned with Red Bull.
Yeah,
So I
but
don't know if
they've
the
had that
fact
for
that.
years, though. That goes back
Yeah,
to
yeah. That is.
2008.
And so is Hi-Tech and so is MP. So that's the three cars, the six cars that you see out there in Red Bull livery. That's what they are. So MP Motorsport, Rodin Carling, Hi-Tech GP, and then you have Iwasa in the Dams car as well, which is also Red Bull aligned. It doesn't make sense. They
Well,
have to reform how this works, or
going
it's
back
never going
to
to work.
the family atmosphere, I mean, can any of those F2 drivers, you know, have any kind of positive relationship to each other?
Absolutely not, because they all need to beat each other.
Otherwise, they will get sacked.
They just won't have a drive. This is the end of their like single, well, it's not the end of the single seater career because there is other options. Let's face it.
It depends. But how many other programs touch Red Bull stuff after Red Bull dump it?
Well, yeah, but I mean, what I mean is they could do what is potentially the smarter thing and go to IndyCar or something like that. Now,
that's what Patricia Award's done.
That's what Award's done. It's what Callum Ilott's done. It's like there's quite a few now of drivers, European drivers, and drivers who have come from.
Yeah, basically take some Red Bull money, but don't be as unaligned as possible with them.
Basically, yeah. But oh, mate, it just driver academies wind me up because they are so cutthroat.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do exactly what the big team tells you to do, you're out. And if you underperform even slightly, rather than try and raise you up and give you that confidence boost and help you improve, you're gone. It doesn't matter. And you pay them. They say you're pretty good. We want you to race for us. Give us some money. And that winds me up as well. Like,
I didn't realize that was the case.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the time, these drivers are paid to be aligned entirely anyway to Red Bull.
Wow.
So, and it's not just obviously there's other academies and they're all similar.
Yeah, but I guarantee in the contracts and also the culture that you won't be allowed to talk to anyone else outside of the Red Bull thing.
Oh, probably. Yeah, probably. And I think that goes for a lot of them. I mean, Callum Ilott the only way he could move to IndyCar was cut ties with Ferrari. Like, that was the only way he could do it because they said to him, no, it's F2 or nothing.
Which is ridiculous because F2 is shit.
it winds me up, mate. It really winds me up, driver academies. You can probably tell.
I've never liked them.
Gone on for a while on this.
I've never liked them. We'll do a proper episode on driver academies at some point.
Yeah, there's a place for them, but they're just so bad. No. There is a place for teaching young drivers. There 100% is. But the way they all work now, the F1 academies are just awful. Awful, yeah. Awful places for drivers to be.
Speaking of awful places for drivers to be, no, not really. BTCC.
mate. Right, so a bit more shuffling about in the British.
These are our two like remaining short topics. So let's go for BTCC.
No, I mostly want to mention this because I know one of these drivers personally, and he's a really, really nice kid. He's got a really nice family, and I wanted to mention this and congratulate him as much as anything. So. Daryl DeLeon, as he will be racing as, formerly known as Daryl Taylor from Rye House, the Rye House boy. He won basically everything at Rye House for ages. Super fast, really nice. His dad's really nice. Just fantastic. And he's going to be racing for Team Hard in British Touring Car next year. He won their scholarship at the end of last year, which would have got him a drive in the Touring Car Cup. Which is a mixture of kind of TCRs and like old spec British touring cars. And it's an interesting series, but it's kind of a way of him learning front wheel drive. He won last year. He won the Radical World Championship in Las Vegas, which is pretty cool. He's beating drivers twice his age. He's 17, and he's a world champion in Radicals. He's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Definitely one to watch. I think he's going to be really, really good. His debut this weekend at Croft in the Cupra has basically come about because of, I cannot find the driver's name, and it's really winding me up, but a driver has left One Motorsport, which is one of the Honda teams. So Jade Edwards has gone back to that team where she started to fill in that spot, which opened up the spot for Daryl. Now, this is fine. This is good. This is really, really good for Daryl. Best of luck to him, really. I think he's going to be fantastic. Be interested to see how he gets on with Ash, who undoubtedly coached him at Rye House at one point. I remember when Daryl broke his arm in the London Cup, sailing over the barrier, landing on the bonnet of someone's car in the car park. In Honda Cadets when he was like 8 or 9, and yeah, now he's racing British touring cars.
Yeah, but it's fine though, because kids just bounce off things, so.
Yeah, he broke his shoulder, but he was fine. but yeah, really, really nice kid. Yeah, lovely family. So yeah, all the best to him for Daryl. Hope he does really, really well. And yeah, just go and smash it, really. That's the plan. Not smash it up, ideally, but smash it.
Nice. Good luck to him. Have we mentioned Jade Edwards yet? Yes, we did. Did we?
Yeah, briefly. I mentioned yes. Jade Edwards will be going back to the One Motorsport, so she's going back into the Honda, which I think she did better in the Honda than she did in the Cupra, so that's probably good for her. But yeah, I mean, we'll see how that goes. One Motorsport, similar level to where she was racing with Team Hard. It's not really an upgrade or a downgrade. It's just a different team, different car. But I think, yeah, she preferred the Honda. So, yeah.
Would be interesting to know how different each touring car does feel in real life for TCR.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because, like, certainly in British touring car, but the standardised subframes and stuff, but the chassis are all different, aren't they? With different shapes and obviously the BMW is just a weird one because rear wheel drive and everything
else. It's a DTM car, but with the downwards taken off.
Basically, but
allegedly.
But no, I think it must be interesting to drive a few and see which ones work better.
Hmm.
And the different characteristics. That I was talking to Zorba the other day, mm-hmm. Chris Panioto, and he was saying that he raced in the VW Cup a while ago now, but he was saying that it was interesting to see the difference between a Golf and a Scirocco, even though they're technically the same, like, chassis. The Scirocco, because it was a little bit longer, was much better in the faster corners,
mm-hmm.
but getting out of slower corners, the Golf was way better. Yeah, so even in a series like that, that's a relatively club level touring car series, there can be those differences in the car that kind of suit the driver or go against the driver for different circuits. So yeah, I think it's probably a positive move for Jade that she's back in a Honda, if that's what she prefers. It's quite a pointy car, I think, the Honda, by all accounts, whereas I think the Cupra tends to be a bit more understeery.
Mm-hmm. But certainly the case on a set of Corsa.
Yeah.
That's why I like it.
So, yeah, I think that's possibly a better move for her. And yeah, it means that Daryl can be up in the big leagues, which is always good.
And speaking of pointy cars, our last mini subject is World Rallycross.
Yes, World Rallycross was back at Liddon Hill for the first time in a few years. Now, I've actually never been to Liddon Hill.
Nope, you're right. I'd
quite like to go, because it's one of those places that, like, if you don't know about Liddon Hill and Rallycross, essentially, Rallycross came about because of Liddon Hill. And now it's a big thing, and obviously the cars are... I've been to Rallycross before, but I've been to Silverstone to watch Rallycross, which was good, but not quite the same. And the cars are mega. They're so fast. It's ridiculous how quick these things are. But they are now in the top category. They are all electric.
Mm.
Now, this is, I think, the best application of electric racing so far.
It's best in Extreme E, I'll give it that.
Yeah, and because it's still... So the reason that Rallycross was really cool is because they were small cars. They were like 700 brake horsepower, four-wheel drive. And then the race is like six laps. So it is pushing to the absolute maximum for the whole race to try and do well. There's no tyre saving. There's no strategy. There's no fuel conservation or anything. It was just lights out, go, run. A sprint race, an absolute sprint race. And that's why I think it works with electric, because there's no, like, battery conservation like you would have in, like, the that Formula E and things like that. It's just quick run. And obviously the noise is not the same.
Hear more stones.
Yeah, but the cars are just as fast. They are just as quick, if not faster. and it's instant talk, so they accelerate even faster than they did before. There was a great stat before that a rallycross supercar, before they went electric, was actually 0-60 quicker than an F1 car. they were so fast, they're rapid, just because of the way they get off the line. And that's really cool to see. And I think, yeah, they are very cool. And I think because it's 6-lap races or 7 or whatever it is now, that works with electric, because then you've got a recharge time after that. But that doesn't matter because there's other stuff on track. So I think that's quite cool. There was a slight problem, and this is, not the first time this has happened, is it? But it's
no.
You don't have it often, where we had a battery fire in the truck. So two of the cars, which are run by a team called One Motorsport, and they run a couple of interesting cars, because they're not really Lanciers, let's face it, but they look like Lancia Delta Integrales, which is really cool. But they caught fire in the truck.
In the spirit of Lancia.
Yeah, with a battery fire. These cars use a standardized battery. So until they could figure out what the problem was with the battery, why it randomly caught fire, they stopped the rest of the cars running as well. Which means, obviously, that the top class, if you were at Lyddon Hill that weekend, you didn't see the top class run, which is a bit disappointing.
I really hope. I sort of really hope that it was actual Italian Lancia bending of maybe the technical rules and hiding it.
Maybe. I don't know much about the team. It's cars certainly look brilliant.
It's certainly a good coincidence.
Yeah, that it was the Lancia that caught fire, and not the Volkswagen or the Citroen. I just think it's a very cool looking series. I hope it comes back to Lyddon Hill next year. I'd quite like to go to that thing. You've got some really big name rallycross drivers in there. You've got Johan Kristoffersen still in there. Sebastian Loeb is there.
Is there anything that Sebastian Loeb's not racing at the moment?
I think he does pretty much everything, doesn't he? You've got both of the Hansons, Kevin Hansen and Timmy Hansen. Timo Schneider, do you remember name from DTM?
DTM boy,
Legend. Schneider's still there. Nicholas Gronholm.
Yep.
Rally driver.
He's a DTM driver.
Yeah, he was, yeah. It's a pretty strong field, really. You've got a few different cars. There's a Seat, there's Citroens, Peugeots, the Lancia thing, and then Volkswagen is the only real kind of factory team, I would say. I think it's cool. Certainly worth going to if you've never been to any rallying event. It's probably more accessible than stage rallying as a spectator.
I still don't really understand why VW aren't in the top level WRC anymore. They got told they couldn't once, and then they've basically taken their toys and walked off for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Which is very odd, but never mind.
There is one driver that I'd like to call attention to, running in the Euro Rallycross Series this year. Just purely because he has a funny name.
Okay.
He is a Czech driver, and he races for KRTZ Motorsport, and his name is Alice Fuckit.
No, it's not.
No, it's Fukik, but it looks like Fuckit. Which is quite funny.
I'm definitely going to put the
expletives warning on it now. Yeah. Although I also said the driver programs are shit. So
I called I forgot his name already. Helmut Marko a wanker. So it's probably
Going to have to put it on this one.
Yeah. Disclaimer: all of our opinions are ours alone. They're nothing to do with anyone else that we're related to.
Exactly. So the championship at the minute for World Rallycross. Johan Kristoffersen is leading it. Nicholas Gronholm second. Kevin Hansen is third. Sebastian Loeb down in eighth.
Does he care?
Probably not. He's having fun.
He's having
And that
fun.
was the
He's
main thing.
like one of the richest French people in the world. He's done what he
Yeah.
wants for the last 20 years.
Exactly. But yeah, so that's Rallycross. Go and look it up if you haven't seen it.
And that's going to end a very bumper edition of This Month from Motorsport.
Yeah, this is a long one. This has been a long one.
So if we've either been somewhere or have a good rant about something, it goes on longer. So
Yes,
you're welcome.
absolutely.
Jack, I hope you have a very nice drive to work listening to this.
Yeah, you might have been two or three commutes, so that's all right.
As usual, follow us on social media at Stelvio Auto. Thank you very much, Sam, for joining me.
Anytime, mate.
And we shall see you next time. Take care and goodbye.
Goodbye.